Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your real estate needs. And just a reminder, as always, please rate, review, subscribe, all those good things. Make sure you don't miss future content that I produce on here, whatever podcast app you're listening to this on, or on YouTube if you're watching. This isn't going to be one of those episodes that's YouTube heavy, so you guys don't need to worry about that. Unless you just want to see my pretty face, then you can see that on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Leave me a comment on there too. I try to respond to every single useful comment, every thoughtful comment that comes through on there, not just the random. I don't know. One time someone just commented, Stan McCune. I don't know why. But anyway, I'd appreciate that. I'd also appreciate if you guys would get a free quote today from this show's sponsor, Piper Insurance Group, my go-to for home, auto, and umbrella insurance. They're an independent insurance agency, so they can quote different insurance companies to make sure that you get the best rate possible among the various carriers in the area. And as well, they are licensed in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. So not just in Greenville, you can get them in the surrounding states, including on investment properties, fix and flips, new ground up construction, residential, commercial, all those good things. So please reach out to Piper Insurance Group today. Free quote. They will help you with that. I highly recommend them. Their information is in the show notes as well. All right. So I've done this a few times in the past, but I wanted to discuss some of my craziest stories of 2024. And some of these are going to be repeat from previous episodes, but this will be a good way to catch up if you've missed a few of my episodes in the past. And if you've heard them all, if you're one of those really devoted listeners, some of this will be stuff that you haven't heard. I'll try to make everything a little bit interesting here. But we always have crazy stories. Crazy things are constantly happening in the world of real estate. It is not a boring job by any means. There's always something wild happening. And I like to share these stories with you. I try not to share any stories that would be disparaging to my clients because that's not cool. A lot of my clients listen to these shows, so I don't want them to be like, hey, wait, he's talking about me. I don't do that. But I do want to, as we come to the end of the year here, and for some of you, this might be the final episode that you hear before Christmas. So Merry Christmas. I've got some great content coming out on Christmas Day, the week after that. So please don't miss my end of year content just because you get busy, because there's some really good stuff coming up here that I think you guys will be interested in. But Merry Christmas if this is your, if you're listening to this right before Christmas, and I hope you guys have a great holiday season. All right. So I've just got a handful of crazy stories from 2024. And I just want to start off with, I have to be careful with how many specifics I give with everything, but I had a listing this year that was a multiple offer listing. Yes, even with a slower market, you still get multiple offers in certain situations. And we had one of those not too long ago where I had multiple offers at a home, a lot of showings, a lot of interest. And I actually got reached out to a few times by unrepresented buyers who were interested in me showing them the home that I had listed. Now, when people call me up, they're unrepresented, I always show them my listings in order to help out my seller. It also gives me an opportunity to potentially pick up a new client down the road as well. But oftentimes it doesn't end up going anywhere. You never know what happens. But a lot of people, they don't understand that they would be better off having a buyer's agent. They just call up the listing agent directly. I don't recommend that to anyone, but you'd be surprised how many people do that. And so I was actually at one of my listings, showing it to someone that wasn't a client, someone that had just called me up. They were just like, hey, can you let me in the home? So I get there and I'm on the front porch going over. We have a brokerage disclosure that I have to go over with them. I'm going over that brokerage disclosure, making sure that I've disclosed everything that I need to, getting them to sign that. These are all just requirements for when you're talking real estate with someone. And while I'm there, another vehicle pulled up. No big surprise. I figured it was another agent. People come out of the car and they yell out, is anyone here Stan? As loudly as they could, And I just kind of looked at the people I was there with, and I was like, yeah, that would be me. You know, I have my name on the sign, so I'm sure that they just saw that. And they said, well, we want to look at the house. And I was like, okay, well, we're doing private showings right now. I'm about to let these kind people in. Also, there's some paperwork that I'd have to go over with you, and I wasn't prepared for this, for you to just pull up here. So if you want, you know, I'm committed to these people right now, and they've got my full attention, but my phone number is right there on the sign where you got my name. So feel free to text me. We can set up a private showing. I can send you the paperwork, and then we can get you in the house that way. Well, they went off with a huff and a puff, angry, and just left. I never heard from them. They never called me. They never texted me. And they just seemed angry about the whole thing. And here's a ridiculous thing is I was, they just thought that they could just come in there and, you know, almost like it was an open house that I was just letting everyone and anyone into the home at that time. That's just not how this works. Now I will say that they were from a generation of people that, most likely at one point, bought and sold real estate before agents were ever really involved. I mean, buyer agency has only been around for 30 years. So there was a time when buyer agents didn't even exist. And I find that people that that bought and sold homes before buyer agents existed tend to think that buyer agents are unnecessary in the market today. You guys know my opinion on that. I'm not going to get in the weeds on that. But for people to get angry because I am helping people that actually set up a private showing with me, and because I wasn't prepared for them, didn't have the paperwork for them, when obviously there was no need for me to bring paperwork for them since they hadn't reached out to me. I mean, it's very simple. I've got my number plastered everywhere. They went off with a huff and a puff, and they missed out on a great house. Ended up selling for $30,000 over list price. And they probably wouldn't have ended up offering that anyway. So I feel like I dodged a bullet on that one, but it is what it is. Those are not the types of people that I typically want to deal with. And part of why I handled the situation like I did was I wanted them to understand that they, honestly, that they were being rude and they were not being considerate to the people that had reached out to me and had scheduled a private showing to see what their response would be. Because if their response was, oh, I'm really sorry, didn't realize that that was the system, blah, 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 then I would have really gone out of my way to make sure that that I was helping them out in any way possible. But when they responded to that in just being mean and nasty, that told me, okay, these are just mean and nasty people, and that's that. Another one that was one of my crazier stories. And I did an entire podcast about a mobile home listing that I had that, I mean, it was the Murphy's Law transaction of Murphy's Law transactions. But even after I recorded that episode, more things happened. And so I recorded a whole episode going through all the different things that happened, but more happened. And so consider this to be the final little bow on this story, okay? So after everything that happened in the episode where I already discussed this, we had one final thing to get us over the hump in order to actually close this transaction. And that was that we had two appraisals done on this house. First appraiser didn't think there was anything wrong with it. Second appraiser didn't like that there was vinyl skirting around the foundation of the home. Felt like it needed to be a more solid type of skirting. And we didn't have any option but to do what that appraiser said. That appraiser had the final say. Even though there was another appraisal, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. That appraiser, basically what they said, we had to abide by it no matter what. And so it was immensely difficult finding people to be able to, capable of doing the work that was required, and then people that were available, obviously. You know, we were still getting tons of rain. You can't do anything in crawl spaces when there's rain. And so, long story short, we got to the end of the month, and the buyer was about to have to renew their lease for a month, and they didn't have the money to do it. The buyer was getting basically all of their money from relatives and other sources, closing costs paid by seller. They didn't have enough money to be able to put another dollar towards this transaction or another dollar towards something else. And the seller really wanted to close it too. The seller needed needed their money as well. And so what the lender recommended was that we go ahead and close prior to the work being done on this foundation. And then, you know, the work would be done after closing, and then the appraiser could go back out and then approve it. The way to do this, we had to get two different quotes from two different contractors to do the work. Those quotes had to be submitted and approved by the lender, and then an amount held back in escrow in order to pay one of those two contractors with an upcharge as well, in case the work ended up being higher, like a contingency amount, in case the work ended up costing more than anticipated. So I started working on getting a quote. The seller, who was not in town, also worked on getting a quote as well from someone that he knew. And so we each got quotes. The seller wanted to go with his guy. And so we went ahead and closed. That went fine. It was what it was. We closed, but we still have this outstanding thing left. So the person had said that my seller's contractor, that he could have the work done on the foundation by the week after closing. Well, guess what? The week after closing came, and I get contacted by the buyer's agent. The contractor didn't show up. And so I'm like, well, what the heck? Okay, the contractor didn't show. And this isn't someone that I know. I don't know this contractor. Remember, this is the guy that my seller hired. So I reach out to my seller. He's like, hey, can you just deal with this directly with the contractor? Gave me his information. And yeah, of course. So I reach out to the contractor, and he said, hey, I'm sorry. You know, we're a small company, and half my crew got sick, and we're working on it. And it's like, okay, all right. So I let everyone know his crew is sick, and we need to wait. He said, you know, we'll have it done by this time next week. This time next week comes by, he still doesn't show up. I reach out to him again. And this time the excuse is, well, we've had rain the past few days. I can't get under there because of the rain. It's like, okay, that is a fair excuse, right? You can't do foundation work in the rain, usually. So, okay, whatever. So I communicate with all parties again. Everyone's a little bit on edge right now, right? You know, remember, this could end up being a problem. There's multiple ways that this could go afoul. So then, you know, he said we'll get out there in another few days. So another few days come by, and he doesn't go out again. And so the buyer's agent contacts me, and we're talking, and she's just like, yeah, the buyer said, you know, a bunch of brick was dumped off at the property, but they've just not seen anyone there working. And in my mind, I went, a bunch of brick? Because I had spoken to the seller. My understanding was that the seller wasn't doing a brick foundation around that mobile home. And so... But that was what the contractor that I had quoted gave me a quote for, was for brick. So I reached out to my contractor that I had reached out to originally and said, I didn't reach out to him yet. I just plugged that back in the back of my head and was just like, okay, this is weird, but maybe my seller had changed it with his contractor. So I reached out to the seller, I reached out to his contractor. Again, it's more hemming and hawing, you know, need more time, not quite there yet. Well, then right after that, I get a text message from the contractor that I had gotten a quote from, and he said, hey, sorry, due to all this weather, we're not going to be able to be out there on Monday to brick the foundation as we had originally planned. We'll go out there on Tuesday. Well, I saw that, and immediately I'm like, wait a minute, that brick is from my contractor, not the seller's contractor. And holy cow, we're in a potentially really bad situation here where we could have two different contractors both thinking that they need to get paid for this job. And I had never given the green light to the contractor that I had gotten the quote from. All I had asked for was a quote, and I had told him that. And so he, you know, contractors, you know how they are. If you've ever worked with them, communication can be a struggle. So long story short, I immediately contacted the seller and was just like, hey, got a potentially really bad situation that could be a really good situation. The good is that my contractor, he already has brick out there and he's ready to get this work done on Tuesday, and I trust that he will. And as opposed to your contractor that has now delayed and delayed for multiple weeks. The bad is that if you don't cancel with your contractor, you're going to have two contractors expecting to get paid. Well, thank goodness it did not take much for him to cancel with his contractor. I don't think his contractor wanted to do the work anyway. And then finally, my guy went out there. They bricked the foundation and all was good. Well, guess what? I had written down this as one of my stories to discuss on this before this happened. Just a few days ago, I get another call. By the way, I'm recording this December 10th. So a few days ago, this is going to come out, I believe, on December 18th. So it's a few weeks ago by the time you're listening to this. But from the time that I am recording this, a few days ago, I get contacted by the seller saying, hey, can I have my money released? And I was like, well, I thought the money was released. The lender had sent an authorization to release the funds to the closing attorney. And the contractor had reached out to me and had made sure everything was lined up for him to get his money. And so everything seemed good to go. So I reached out to the contractor and was like, hey, did you get paid? And he was like, no, we've not been paid yet. And I was like shocked that he hadn't made a big fuss about it because he had made a big deal about it earlier. And so I reached out to the closing attorney and was just like, hey, we need to release these funds to the seller and the contractor. And they said, well, we can't until we get permission from the buyer or the buyer's agent to do so on the basis of the work having been completed. And I said, well, you've already gotten an authorization from the lender and the appraiser's already been out there and approved the work. So no, you don't need anything else beyond that. And the closing attorney sent me a form that they claimed, yes, we do need authorization from the buyers or buyer's agent. Well, I looked at the form and the form said that they need authorization from the lender who had given them authorization. Well, by that point, I'd already gone back and forth and I was already really angry with the closing attorney about this anyway, because I did not need, I'm so done, right? This is a transaction I'd been working on for like 5 months. I'm so done with it by now. And so I just reached out to the buyer's agent. I was just like, can you please tell this attorney that the brickwork is done and they can release the funds? And they did, the buyer's agent did, and they finally released the funds. And my mobile home listing from hell is finally, I think, finally done. I hope I never hear from this home again. I don't care. I don't want to hear from it again. I'm done with it. Another story that I've alluded to before. I've talked about a refinance that I was doing on a couple of my duplexes and talked about how we got some crazy appraisals that came in. I did a whole episode on that. If you've not listened to that, please go back and listen to it, because it's a very fascinating story with regard to how different appraisers work and how sometimes they miss things, and a good agent, which, yeah, I'm gonna say I'm a good agent. I hope so. If I'm not, I don't know what I'm doing here. But a good agent can sometimes correct appraisers. Well, that story I thought was done when I recorded that one too. But that story is still ongoing as well. Because guess what? Underwriters determined on their own that my lease agreements were fraudulent. My lease agreements that my property manager signed in writing, there's not even e-signing, it's wet signatures with my tenants. And for some reason, they flagged them as fraudulent. And now they won't release the money for me. They won't even let us get to closing because they thought the leases were fraudulent, and now they're in this like long underwriting thing. They had a nasty conversation with my property manager. They did all sorts of things, and I'm here, I'm stuck. I can't even switch to another lender. Well, I could pivot to another lender if I wanted to, but I've got, you know, if you listen to my episode on this one, I'm actually happy with the appraisals I got, and I don't want to go back out there and have to reinvent the wheel, get new appraisals, all of that, because this has already been done one time. I'd have to pay for double everything. No thank you. And so now, you know, this has been the year that everything has been difficult. Everything has felt difficult. And so here we go. Now I have a situation where my property manager is upset. We can't reach someone with the underwriters that are helpful. And here we are, we're just waiting on a paper pusher to sign off on something that's the most ridiculous thing ever. So here's some of the nonsense that we deal with in real estate. Sometimes it's underwriters. Now, I always recommend working with lenders that have local underwriters. Unfortunately, none of my local lenders that have local underwriters could handle this refinance for me. And so I ended up having to go with a different lender that their underwriter is out in California. Now, the lender is local, but the underwriter is not. And here we go. Here's the problem. These are the sorts of things that people don't think about when they're selecting a lender, is that something as basic as where the underwriter is located can sometimes derail a whole transaction. Here I am right now. I don't know what's going to happen. It's been one of the craziest things I've ever dealt with, and hopefully it'll be over soon. Another story that I've alluded to in the past, but I'd be completely remiss if I did not bring up as one of my crazy stories of 2024, the week and weeks following Helene. I mean, Hurricane Helene was unlike anything that Greenville has ever had. The entire county was basically without power for a week to 2 weeks, at least some, in some cases, 3, 4, 5 weeks people were without power. It was insane. The first day that I went out after Helene, I was completely ill-prepared. I had not gassed up the day before the storm. I didn't think the storm was going to have that big of an impact. I was just completely out of the loop. This is a busy week for me, so that was just on me. I'm not blaming anyone for that one. I can't blame an appraiser or an underwriter for Helene and for me not being prepared for that. That was just on me. I had like 40 miles till empty. And I go out and every gas station is either out of gas, has no power, or is so backed up that it's like, I don't even know if my 40 miles, I've got a pickup truck. I don't even know if it's going to last me. I went to, I think, 15 different gas stations. Almost none of them had gas. The ones that did, it looked like it was going to be a 2 to 3 hour wait at best. And then, you know, you're gambling with whether they'll have gas by the time that wait is over. I saw people literally just waiting at gas stations that had no power, just hoping against hope that somehow the power would come back. It was crazy. The whole thing was very apocalyptic. Very apocalyptic scene all around. And I finally found a gas station over near Highway 14 towards Greer. And I got in line for it. And I was in line for like an hour. I had my wife, you know, my gas was now down to 10 miles until empty. And of course, you know, it's inconsistent. You never know how accurate that's going to be. I have my wife coming with like a gallon of gas in case I run out while I'm in line. I mean, the whole thing was crazy. I pull up to the pump on empty. There's people having fights at the gas station. Like I said, it's like a post-apocalyptic kind of situation. I don't think in my life I have ever felt so relieved as I did when I filled up my tank with gas and just knew I don't have to worry about this. I will be able to, you know, go around, see my listings, continue on with my life, and not have this one thing looming over my head, because none of us knew what was going to happen. We didn't know how long are we going to be without power. Are we going to be without gas for an extended period of time? And none of that ended up being an issue. Like if I could have just waited 3 or 4 days, all those lines went away. right? Power started coming back at those high priority locations. There was plenty of gasoline to go around. This was a fairly isolated gasoline situation. And so it ended up being not that big of a deal. But it was a big deal to me because I hadn't gassed up prior to the storm. And I needed to go out and then go around to look at my listings, which that was its own crazy thing. Every single listing I had a tree down somewhere. One of them, we got under contract the day before the hurricane, and we still haven't closed because a tree fell on the front porch. Now, thankfully, the buyers still wanted to move forward with the transaction, but we had to make an insurance claim. And now, actually today as I'm recording this, the appraiser is going back out to review the work to make sure that the porch was done correctly. I mean, what a trip. I was arranging for lawn care people to haul away massive trees. I mean, it was just one thing after another. My office somehow had power, even though my house didn't. I was late nights at my office. Because it was like, I went that first night without power, went home, and it's like dark at like 7 p.m. My dog was asleep. I have a very energetic dog. She was asleep at like 7:30 in like a deep sleep. I've never before seen her do that. Not since she was a puppy. And you know, as a puppy, they just take those naps all the time. No. She was like out for the night. And she, like I said, I can't express how weird that is for her to do that. We were all just really thrown off by everything. I was grateful that my office had power. That was clutch. I was going over there recharging everything, using the water and ice that they had. I mean, it was fantastic. But, man, I don't think anything will trump in 2024. I mean, I will always think of this hurricane. I will always associate that storm with this year because that was just such, everything about it was so crazy. And I don't care to have something like that again. And this gave me new respect for people that live in Florida and Louisiana and people that get battered by these storms all the time. I couldn't do it. I will never move to one of those states. Hold me accountable. If I ever decide or say that I'm thinking about moving to one of those states, hold me accountable because I don't have any desire to do it. I'm going on the record now that I won't do it. Because that is just too, it's just too much, too crazy. Being a couple of weeks without power and having to go through all those hoops and seeing people fighting at gas stations, no thank you, that's not for me. Another crazy thing from 2024, and this will certainly be one of the things that I associate with this year as well, was, so I've mentioned a few times on here that earlier this year I joined the board of directors for the Greater Greenville Association of Realtors. It was announced just a few weeks ago when I was sworn in, but I actually started serving in January in an interim seat on the board. And guess what? We had a massive thing that happened in the Association of Realtors when the National Association of Realtors lost a lawsuit and then a massive settlement that completely changed the entire industry was then leaked prior to them preparing anyone for it. And guess what? I'm on the board of a local association and we're having to deal with the fallout from all of this and none of us were prepared for it. Not one person. And that's not due to a lack of preparation. That's because the National Association of Realtors didn't tell any of us that this was going to happen. And I don't think that they could tell us because of potential legal ramifications. They had to announce it to everyone at the same time. But then, of course, it was leaked. And so that just expedited the timeline, created all sorts of fallout. It was insane. The NAR was not prepared for it to be released when it was released. The local association certainly was not prepared. And what a time to join a board of directors at a time when, I mean, one of my first phone calls after all of that was someone that is not a realtor, but is directly impacted by the real estate industry. And this person, their employment is directly impacted by it. And this person was like, am I going to lose my job? Like this was the level of freak out that happened right away as a result of that settlement was crazy. Now, since it's happened, you know, our industry, we always adapt and survive. It always happens. We've been through, real estate is an industry that goes through the ringer more so than many industries, right? Because it's such a decentralized world. It's super local. There's not a whole lot of major power players in the real estate world from the standpoint of the real estate brokerages and agents. So it's very decentralized. And so as a result of that, it can be kind of disorganized in some ways. And that's why the National Association of Realtors exists, is to bring some level of centralization and organization to a very unique local industry. But the weeks following that NAR settlement was crazy, particularly me serving on a local association board. It just made it a whole nother thing. We had to have long conversations discussing the future of the industry. Even had an entire day that we spent kind of game planning, you know, how does all this work in you know, the scenario, in a bunch of different scenarios, what kind of make sure that we're bringing the best value to the members of the association. A lot going on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know. But it was crazy. That's one of those things that unless you were there, you don't fully understand how crazy it was, but it was quite crazy. Another one, this was earlier in the year. I was actually going back through all of my closings and was reminded, oh yes, I had a closing that fell out from being under contract 3 different times before it finally worked out. It finally went under contract for the 4th time with a buyer that was actually willing to close on it. Never in my life. Now, I'm sure there are some agents listening to this that have had this happen before. But for me personally, my number one priority when I get someone under contract is that it does not fall through. Okay? That is the number one priority, because nobody is happy when a contract falls through. All parties are upset. And usually, they feel a little bit upset towards you as the agent, even if you had nothing to do with it. So I make it a really, really high priority. Let's try to get out in front of potential issues on the front end. Let's look at this house closely during the showing. Let's make sure that we leave no stone unturned insofar as we can prior to going under contract, because we don't want the contract to fall through. So for me to have a contract fall through 3 times, never in my career have I had anything close to that. And everyone was upset. I was done with it. My clients were done with it. And you know what? I even had a conversation. One of them at one point kind of tried to fire me. Another one later wanted to make sure, and they were divorced. So they weren't talking to each other. That was a whole nother thing. It made it even more difficult. Another one, you know, at one point was like, after the 3rd contract fell through, do you actually want this listing? Do you still want to work with us? And I was like, yes, I have pushed the ball forward this long. I am going to see this to completion. I'm stubborn, sometimes to a fault. That was crazy. I mean, I had this listing under contract so many different times, and I had it listed for so long. And when that closing finally happened, the amount of relief, I felt like I had a new lease on life. I mean, and I've had multiple of these this year. I haven't had a year like this. That, you know, when I talked about during the Thanksgiving episode that it's been a hard year in many ways, it's just because so many transactions were really difficult. And, you know, I've said on the show before, the hardest transactions are the cheapest ones, the ones that you as a realtor don't get paid the most for. And that's true. A $150,000 transaction usually is much more difficult than an $850,000 transaction. It's just the way it is. There's a lot of reasons for that. Well, I was looking through my closings for the year, just kind of, you know, recalibrating, just kind of seeing, okay, you know, I know in the back of my head what the year was, but let's actually look at it. And I mean, the number of closings I had that were below $300,000, even below $250,000, a huge number of closings. So there it was like, I'm looking at it, and I was like, okay, it makes sense. This is why this was such a hard year. Was I was literally in the sandbox, playing in the sandbox with the most challenging transactions, because all of these, just about every single transaction I had some kind of a twist or turn that you just couldn't anticipate, and things that were, for a lot of people, once in a career type of thing, they all just happened to me this year. And that home needing to go under contract four times before it finally sold was one of those things. Last story, and I saved the best for last. I'm not gonna go into all of the details on this one, but there are some funny ones. So I had some people who contacted me, and they contacted me that they wanted me to list their home. Well, the conversation was odd from the get-go. It was there was just a lot of different things that felt off about it, but it was just like, okay, you know, so they're telling me they've got this investment property. They want to sell it. They want me to look at it. And so I'm like, okay, well, when are you available for us to meet at the home? And they said, oh, well, we were just hoping you could go look at it yourself. And I was like, go look at it. Like, why won't you be there? And it was just like, well, we're going out of town. I'm like, oh, okay, well, when do you get back in town? And it was quiet for a second, and I hear another person, not the person I'm talking to, another person, and I can tell that they're in a vehicle, say, never, we're never coming back. And I'm like, did I say something wrong? Why are they never coming back? I'm just very confused. So then I'm like, okay, you know, well, I can go look at it myself. How do I get in? You know, they describe some things to me. And then, of course, I asked a customary question at some point in this conversation. You know, how did you find my number? How did you hear about me? And again, silence. And then the person I'm talking to says, well, I don't really want to say. And I'm like, what? And then the other person says, just tell him. And they're like, no, I don't want to tell you. Well, it ended up being that it was just someone that I knew from like college had referred me to them. I don't know why they didn't want to tell me, but it came out later. Then they're like, you know, we've got another section of the property. We want you to go in there. We want you to throw out something that's in there. and also we've been scrubbing it with bleach. And because it smelled, there was something that smelled bad in there. We were scrubbing it with bleach. And just tell us if it still smells bad in there. And I'm just like, I watch, you know, one of my guilty pleasures is like true crime shows. Usually one of the last things I do before I go to sleep is I watch like a murder mystery. I just enjoy those. And one of the hallmarks of murder mysteries is the savvy murderers use bleach to clean up the scene after they're done. Right. I mean, bleach can really make it challenging for law enforcement to process a crime scene. And so I'm like, am I about to enter a crime scene? And I can't tell you, there is so much more to the story that I can't say for a variety of reasons. But it was the wackiest. I mean, just so many different things. I ended up having to throw away something from them. In the microwave, they had these like frozen noodles. I don't even know what's happening. I had to go throw away their noodles. I had to dispose of a dead mouse. I mean, inside the house, there were so many absolutely insane things that I could do an entire podcast. And originally I was going to do an entire podcast just on that story. There are some reasons why I couldn't end up doing that, unfortunately. But if you want to hear the story, the full story, I'd be happy to tell you over the phone. That's the only way that you're going to get it from me. So we can discuss it that way, but I'm not going to go into any more details on this show. So those are my craziest stories of 2024. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Hopefully 2025 won't be quite as crazy, but I'm sure there will be more crazy stories then as well. So yeah, if you want more details, give me a call. My contact information is in the show notes. If you need a realtor in Greenville as well, please let me know. If you need home insurance, umbrella or auto, contact Piper Insurance Group. Also, contact info in the show notes. And please rate, review, subscribe, all those good things so you don't miss future episodes of the show. And we will talk again next time.